Blog Talk Radio.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode number 232. Rick Morris and Kyle Ross coming at you as we have been all NFL season. This week, breaking down the divisional round of playoff games. Last week, four of the wild card games on these here virtual airwaves. 3-1, I believe, for both of us. I certainly know that was the case with me, as I had Cincinnati. The misguided thought that they would get the backdoor cover in that one, but probably still lose the game. They lost. They did not cover. Had the favorites in the other games, as I believe was the case also with Kyle. Kyle Ross, my good friend, if my memory is correct on it as well, right? We were in accord on all four games. I believe that we were. Kyle Ross, there we go. I believe that we were in accord on the four games, were we not?
Yes, we were. I was just about to say, you know, you don't want to call it a boring show, but we certainly were agreeing on every game. So, yeah, 3-1 for both of us, continuing the strong trend we've seen all year long. You know, it's been a good year. It's been a good year. Hopefully,
absolutely.
Yeah, hopefully we can keep it going in the divisional round. I got to say, you know, I didn't really feel great about any of the four games last week. I don't feel particularly great about any of the four this week, maybe with one exception. But, you know, looking at the wild card games, Ricky, I just wanted to make this point first that you know how I watch these games. I mean, it's becoming almost, you know, sociopathic. I mean, how I don't like to socialize. I really like to hone in and kind of watch them by myself. But I sort of felt like I kind of wasted my weekend last Saturday and Sunday. I can't recall a weekend, whether it be playoffs or regular season, where I learned any less from a set of NFL games than I did last weekend. I don't know if you felt the same way.
I just thought that they sucked, Kyle. I mean, it just aesthetically. I've said for a long time, close games or relatively close games can still suck, and I was just left wanting in them. The only game of the weekend that really held my attention at all, the Seattle and Washington game, and even then, it was annoying because Seattle would kind of like keep driving, get turned away, and for Washington, you're looking at them going, just die already, okay? You're going to lose the game. You are wasting my time. I felt like my time was getting wasted all weekend as well, Kyle.
Well, I actually, you know, I mean, you know, I was, you know, kind of boyfriend of the year on Saturday. I actually, halfway through the Green Bay Minnesota game, just, you know, looked at Tammy and just was like, you know, if you want to turn this off, feel free. Because, I mean, I knew going in, the Packers were a better team, and, you know, it certainly didn't take very long for that point to be reiterated. But that's kind of the way I felt about all four games last week, Ricky.
Before the women of America start swooning at your gesture, that game sucked, and we knew it was going to suck going in. So I hate to undermine you, my friend, but
if you got any women of America,
it's because she didn't know how bad the game was.
Ricky, we call that a cock block where I'm from, by the way. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that. Maybe we need to edit. But, okay, the women of America didn't know that Green Bay versus Minnesota was supposed to suck, so you just blew my cover. Thanks very much.
Sorry,
but anyway,
sorry.
No, listen here. But here's the point I'm trying to make. Of the four, watching the four games last weekend, I don't think coming out of them that I think more highly of any of the teams or think any less of any of the teams than I did going in. I think maybe the lone case would be Cincinnati, who, as you mentioned, was the one team you and I were wrong on. We both had them plus the 4.5, and they just played very poorly against Houston. Although Houston dominated the total yardage, I think it was something like 420 to 190, something that, I mean, it was very lopsided despite the relatively close score. Houston settled for a lot of field goals. I just feel that the other three games, you and I would probably be in agreement, judging from what we've said during the course of the year. The other three games involved teams that I at least feel overachieved to get to the playoffs, those being Minnesota, Indianapolis, and Washington, right? I mean,
yeah.
Those are kind of the three surprise playoff teams.
I would totally agree with that, no question.
Okay, so, you know, throw out that Cincinnati kind of disappointed me, whatever. But looking at the other three games, those three overachieving teams, the clock kind of struck midnight on all of them with sort of these extenuating circumstances that just spelled doom from almost, you know, the first minute. In the case of Minnesota, you had a situation where we already knew the Packers had a pronounced edge at quarterback with Rodgers against what we thought was going to be Christian Ponder. I am still amazed to this minute that in this age of Twitter and 24-hour sports coverage, that it wasn't up until like an hour or two before the game that it was announced Joe Webb was starting. And that pretty much sealed the Vikings' fate really there. I mean, Webb is, I think he started once before in that weird Tuesday. Wasn't there a Tuesday game? I was thinking of this during the week, and I forgot to look it up now. There was a Tuesday game a few years ago, wasn't there? Was when the roof fell in at the Metrodome? And I think he started for Brett Favre. Joe Webb, bless his soul. You know, he comes from a UAB program that's lost about 10 games every season the last 20 years. So, you know, he has no business starting in a game. It was an unfair spot. Minnesota had no chance. You know, I know they fell behind early, but Adrian Peterson has to get more than 22 carries. So anyway, Minnesota, you know, so okay, Green Bay dominated Minnesota, whatever. Moving to Baltimore, Indianapolis, you saw a situation where that morning it was learned that, and this was a real cruel twist of fate, I thought, after missing their head coach all season, Chuck Pagano, Bruce Arians filled in so admirably, and I think he was the NFL Coach of the Year. If I was a voter, I'm not, obviously. I would have given him NFL Coach of the Year. But he's lost to an illness the morning of the game, so the overachieving Colts, kind of, they didn't do anything on offense. I mean, that was about as bad as they looked all year on offense. I know the Ravens got healthy on defense, but still, you know, so that was kind of a game. And then the last game was, as you mentioned, was kind of the only real tangible thing that the media could really stick its teeth into was the RG3 situation with Seattle and Washington, which I know wasn't unforeseen. You and I exchanged a few emails before the show. Griffin was, we all knew, was not 100% leading into that game. But I guess just because it's a hot-button issue, I kind of want to sound off on it for a minute about the whole Griffin thing. I don't care.
I think that's a good idea to take a look at. Kirk Cousins is somebody that they should have gone to because, again, this is a guy who played very well when given the opportunity.
Well, okay, well, it's funny you say that because here's my point, and I think I'm going to take a totally different approach than anyone else has taken and just give the Seattle defense its just due. Now, I like Seattle a lot, as you know, and it should be pointed out, and you can attest to this, I think I beat my all-time record for panic mode in an NFL game on Sunday when I texted you, record 5 minutes in saying, I feel sick, I think Seattle's done.
Yep. I remember getting that text.
Yeah, and you just lay. I think you hit me back with the old LOL or something like that. But anyway, you know, the true best comment actually came from my girlfriend who I'm watching the game with, and she's like, what's wrong? I thought Seattle was so good. What are they doing wrong? And I go, and I'm screaming, and I'm going to have to keep this PG somewhat. I'm like, I don't know. This is a defense that gives up 15 points a game, and they've already given up 14, and the game's only 5 minutes old. And she goes, oh, well, maybe they won't give up any more points then. And I kind of look at her like, oh, you know, how sweet of you. Go up, maybe the bachelor's not upstairs. And lo and behold, Sherman cashed the second half under, and it wasn't me. So, but the Seahawks defense is where I think the focus should be for that. I want to tell you this right now. Because hindsight guy, I don't really like hindsight guy anyway, but I'm going to take him to task here. I don't care if they kept Griffin in, took him out early, if they had Kirk Cousins in, your cousin in. Washington wasn't scoring on Seattle the rest of the way. They had no chance to win that game unless if Griffin could play close to 100%, which we know in hindsight he couldn't, but I think leaving him in there with the hope that he can do something was their only chance, believe it or not. I know this is the minority opinion, but if you look, the only two drives Washington did anything on is when they kind of ran the offense that carried them to that hot stretch at the end of the regular season, you know, with Morris and Griffin doing the read option. Pocket passers like Kirk Cousins, and I know he didn't have a large sample size and it kind of wasn't a very favorable situation when he eventually did get in the game, but as you're going to see this week with Atlanta, more on that later on, folks, pocket passers don't do well against Seattle. Kirk Cousins would not. Now, you can say, okay, he had two legs, and he certainly came in his spot duty during the end of the season and performed admirably, particularly for a backup quarterback in this league. I think most guys would like to have Cousins. Most teams would like to have Cousins as their backup. But Seattle is not the Cleveland Browns, Ricky. Kirk Cousins would not have – if Washington fan is sitting at home right now thinking, if we would have put Kirk Cousins in the first quarter, we would have won that game. I'm here to tell you, I think you're wrong. I just think you're wrong.
I don't think Washington could have pulled it out in any instance. I'll agree with you as far as that goes. I will say this, though. I think that, again, merely having a quarterback, yes, a pocket quarterback with two healthy legs, I think that would help somewhat. And, again, you cannot take out of the equation the part that you didn't mention yet. I'm sure you were getting to this, the risk of the future as well. You're looking at trying to win that game, and you're looking at what comes afterwards. RG3 is compromised now into the 2013 season to whatever degree as a result of this. That's where I think the onus is on him. And, again, the fact that apparently Shanahan and RG3 blew off Dr. James Andrews, who, again, of all the people on God's green earth who you're going to try and kayfabe about an injury, I don't know why you would do it with the most brilliant medical doctor arguably on earth.
Yeah, I hear you, but I mean, again, hindsight's 2020, and I know, and, you know, it certainly appears that that Shanahan screwed up. I'll just say this, though. Washington was still winning the game in the fourth quarter, and it didn't really, the dam didn't break, so to speak, until the last, 7 minutes when he tore the ACL. He was injured the last couple weeks, and they still won, remember? So, I mean, in hindsight, of course, I mean, if Shanahan knew that he would tear his ACL. And granted, the situation he was putting him in is not ideal. I mean, if you're less than 100% in an NFL game, you're vulnerable. But he wasn't probably the only
person. Aren't you more likely to have that happen, though, Kyle, if you're not 100%? I'm not an expert on the knee,
but
as I understand.
I just wanted to point this out, Ricky. Chris Clemens, by all accounts, was fine, and he tore his ACL in that game.
Okay. All right.
You can tear
it different ways. You can have it happen on one play. My sense with Griffin, and I might be wrong on this, is that him tearing the ligament there or ligaments was kind of a cumulative process because he'd had damage in the time leading up to that. I might be wrong about that. That was my sense.
No, that's true. And he missed, 09 at Baylor?
Yeah.
A lot of people that, you know, kind of the NFL-only fan, of which, you know, there's a decent percentage of people who, you know, clearly pay more attention to the NFL than college may not even know. I mean, by now they do, just because it's been rehashed so many times. You know, Griffin missed basically a full season at Baylor,
right,
3 years ago. So, I mean, he's had problems before, but I just think that, yes. I mean, if you want to talk about Griffin's long-term future, yeah, Shanahan was putting him at risk. I'd be more likely to take him to task there. But the exception I take is that if Kirk Cousins was put in that game earlier, that Washington definitely would have won. I think that's nonsense, personally.
I would agree with that also.
I just think the Seattle defense is that good. And I just wanted to say just one final thing on the wild card weekend, unless if, you know, for our purposes as far as handicapping goes, unless if you had something else you wanted to add. The big news is, I guess the one thing you didn't learn it just happened, just to take from it, favorites covered all four games and the under cashed all four games. That's kind of unusual to me because usually favorites are tied to overs while underdogs are tied to unders. So for four favorites to cover and all four games to stay under, pretty unique. And it kind of makes me, looking forward to this week, Ricky, want to look at underdogs and overs. But in the case of And very well, some of these games might go over. That's not what we're going to talk about here, but we'll just be talking about the point spread. I'm not inclined to take very many dogs this week, particularly with those AFC matchups.
I can understand that. We'll start taking a look at it here. My last thing to put a bow on wild card weekend, I'm going to tie together two separate things that you said. You talked about Joe Webb playing his college ball at UAB. Of course, to tie this to the comment that I made about your magnanimous gesture vis-a-vis the Minnesota and Green Bay game, WUAB, of course, in our hometown of Cleveland, Ohio. What did their slogan used to be back in the day? the block. So it all ties together with what I did to you making the comment about the Minnesota Green Bay game.
Yes, there we go. Very good. I see you working hard
here.
Kyle,
on a Thursday night. Yes, okay, there we go. Everything ties together. You can see the smoke coming out of my ears, but everything ties together.
Yes, I see you working hard on a Thursday night here. So, it was that way. Joe Webb, my God. Catherine Webb, greater than Joe Webb. I will tie that together, okay?
Yeah, I was thinking of Joe Cap also, too.
Let me tell you something. Catherine Webb greater than Joe Cap as well, okay? Let me tell you that, okay?
Well, I think another friend of ours from back in the day, if we're going to go, a guy's named Joe with four-letter last names, friend, Cleveland sportscaster Joe Wall probably could have done better back there.
No comment from you. Yeah, we may have hit a roadblock on that one.
No comment about our fellow Ohio Bobcat. All right.
No.
So the ones this weekend here, the FBH Western Bureau out in Denver has been festooned with all things Broncos now for weeks leading up to this one, as FBH senior editor Jason Jones is in full rah-rah pom-pom mode on his adopted Denver Broncos. They're laying 10 up from 9 at the Open against Baltimore this weekend. And in looking at this, Kyle, this is one shot here where I look, and it to me is the most clear favorite pick of the weekend. I don't think there are too many people who think that there is much of a chance that they are going to lose this game outright. It merely seems to be a matter at this point of whether or not they're going to cover. And one of the things that I look at here, last year, it's funny, you and I talked about this. People always looked at the Broncos and said, that defense bailing out Tim Tebow, whatever. The defense last year was bend but not break. They were decent, but they were not overwhelming. This year, particularly against the run, 91.1 yards.
Yeah, they're much better this year.
They are. And it's a strength-v-strength thing with Ray Rice going up against that Denver rush defense. And strength-v-strength, this ain't baseball where the tie goes to the runner. I think in a lot of instances, tie goes to the defense in these kind of situations here. The thing that the Ravens do best, the thing that the Ravens are going to need the most if they're going to stay in this game, they're going to be very, very challenged to do with one of the best running backs in football, Ray Rice. I just don't see this one even necessarily being that close. USA Today Sports Weekly's pick is 35-17. That sounds about right to me. I would look for something about in that ballpark as Denver gradually pulls away, I'd say even in the third quarter, and it's not going to be close at the end in my estimation.
Before I give my pick, because I pretty much agree with you, did we want to mention that, because I know you emailed me earlier in the week, that these lines, and it's funny, obviously, I have the answer to my question, that you're undeterred. For the two AFC games, you know, last week you and I basically said there's no way in hell that the AFC Championship game is not going to be New England at Denver. And you would email me earlier in the week that these lines kind of reflect, which obviously reflects that notion. We're not the only two people who think that, I'm sure.
Well, they're a point or two higher in both instances than I thought.
Yeah.
Now, is that to try to get the public so that you're trying to get enough people on Baltimore and on Houston? Is that what that was about?
Yes. The books are very terrified of these two games. The public has done very well all year betting favorites, particularly in things like teasers and parlays and stuff like that. And it's funny that it has crept up to the key number of 10. You know, 7.5 to 9.5 is kind of what they call the lines maker dead zone. But it has crept up to 10 here, which is interesting. I expect some of the sharp money to try to grab Baltimore at 10, just out of principle. I'm not saying that I think that's a good bet, as you'll hear in a minute. But you're right. I'm with you that these lines are higher. They almost couldn't make them high enough in that the general public is going to obviously be in love with the two favorites. The books, I mean, it'll be interesting to see if both lines climb above 10 by kickoff in some sort of just desperate act by the books to get some money on these underdogs, because it's tough to make a case for either of them. Now, with Baltimore, I've seen a few people try to make the case for the Ravens. And I realize that first meeting in the regular season, you know, obviously this is one of three regular season rematches this week. I picked Baltimore in that game, and I watched a great deal of it, and the game swung tremendously, Ricky, if you remember, on a pick six Joe Flacco throw at the end of the first half. Baltimore was inside Denver's 10. They were looking to make it, 10-3 at worst, could have been 10-7 going in a half. Then, of course, we all know what happens. Flacco throws the pick. Denver takes the house 17-0 at halftime. That's ball game. They were up 31-3 at one point. So there is that, and the Ravens, is it a different game if Baltimore goes into the half 10-7, maybe? And then Baltimore's obviously a lot healthier now, too. We saw Ray Lewis, what a tremendous inspiration he was last week, with his probably different podcast for a different time on Your and My Differences on Ray Lewis. But it was nice to see him go out, his career get celebrated. And to put things in perspective, I was reading an article on, I think it was Grantland, about Lewis, just to make a point here, that, they had some undrafted free agent, they meaning the Ravens, on the field for every snap against Denver in the regular season game. I can't remember the guy's name because he's of no consequence, but he didn't play at all last week against the Colts. So the Ravens are a lot healthier defensively. But that said, I just think, this is a terrible matchup for them. Their secondary still has question marks. They're kind of the team that draws the short straw, so to speak, in that they're on the short week. This happens to one team every year where they play in the wild card round Sunday and then they're, a divisional round game on Saturday. Even worse, it's in Denver, thin air, first game of the weekend, so it's a real short week for them. I'm with you. I don't see any way the Ravens win. And listen to this. This ultimately caused me to make my decision with Patriots Texans. Listen to this, Ricky. I look back. Of the last 48 playoff games that have been played, this goes back to 2008. It includes last week's four games. There have been 48 playoff games played. The straight-up winner has covered the spread in 45 of those games.
Whoa.
The point spread has not come into play very often. And here are the three instances here. Last year, Baltimore was laying, I believe it was 7.5. They beat Houston by 7. So that was gross.
Right.
So that's why if this does get up over 10, I'm going to be a little more nervous. So Baltimore failed to cover by 0.5 last year against Houston in this round at home. A few years ago, I can't remember the exact year, but it was the NFC Championship game. It was the Minnesota-New Orleans NFC Championship game where Brett Favre single-handedly cost the Vikings the game. Everyone remembers the game.
Yeah. 31-28.
Vikings lost by a field goal. They were getting 4. So, again,
okay.
It was very close. They missed covering by 1 point. And most would say if Favre doesn't make, that was at the time his third of 3 horribly reckless playoff passes in his career that cost his team the game. If he doesn't make that pass, Minnesota wins the game outright. So you almost had that instance struck from the books here. The only other time a straight-up winner did not cover the spread since 2008 in the playoffs was the Pittsburgh-Arizona Super Bowl, where, again, you almost had an outright winner, but Roethlisberger threw the touchdown pass in the waning seconds to give the Steelers the win. So, generally, the team that wins covers. Now, this is a high number, I realize, but there have been some high numbers involved during that stretch. So, yeah, that was a long-winded response for me to say I agree with you. Lay the points with Denver.
Okay, two last points I've got on this game. One, with what you mentioned about Ray Lewis, and I understand the question was put to him about a bust in Canton, and he said, I can't comment on pending court cases. So that's one.
let me tell you something. It is just – it's amazing how some people in society – never mind. I'm going to leave it at that. That's a different podcast for a different day. All I can say is Ray Lewis – I salute you on a phenomenal career. But, to that point, kind of a letdown for Baltimore, no? Don't you think they wanted to win that game so bad? Regardless of what you think of Ray Lewis, let's just take that out of the equation. They wanted so badly to win for him last week that you got to wonder how much emotion is drained out of them. And he played well last week, too. All the naysayers, all the critics, he played well last week. I know he dropped the gimme interception, but led the team in tackles. I thought playing a very good game.
They were up for that. They had their contrived response to Chuck Strong, and they were up for that game,
oh,
won that
for
game.
God. Yeah,
it's gonna
be this too.
What?
Oh, I just want to say this. Baltimore is always worse on. All throughout the John Harbaugh tenure, they have been 10 times better at home than on the road, too. That's something else we didn't even mention.
Well,
you know, I mean, they have not been a good road team under Harbaugh.
Last note I have about Baltimore, because you've been beating the drum all year about they don't show up very well in the Vegas power rankings and everything else like that. I was really, really looking through their numbers to try to find a couple of things that stood out, and there were two. They actually, for a team this year that went 10-6, outgained in first downs 326 to 314 and only a 36.9 third down conversion percentage.
Yeah.
Not good numbers at all. Some of the poorest numbers you're going to find in the playoffs this year, and illustrative of a team you've been saying all year relative to their record of paper tiger and numbers like that back it up.
Yeah, when they were 9-2, I really was hitting that drum that this was not, that their numbers were not indicative of a 9-2 team and there would be a downward slide. I think they just kind of got a fortunate draw there in the wild card round, drawing a team that overachieved even more than they did, Indianapolis, but their time is up. Denver goes to host the AFC Championship game next week.
Right. So we're looking at that one, and then the nightcap, Saturday night at Candlestick.
Oh, yeah.
8 o'clock Eastern time on Fox. Buck and Aikman on the call. The lovely and delicious Pam Oliver on the sidelines with Erin Andrews, not too bad herself. Green Bay Packers at the San Francisco 49ers, a great playoff rivalry of the 90s. Rekindled San Francisco weighing 3. That's been pretty steady all week. This is the one where you and I are going to diverge on the predictions here. I seem to
finally,
be seeing coming into
finally.
This week. We haven't disagreed yet in the playoffs. It seemed like coming into this week, like before the last round of games, that a whole boatload of people were all on the bandwagon of San Francisco winning this game, at least making it to the next round. I'm seeing a little bit of it swing the other way here. USA Today Sports Weekly says Packers 27-21. That sounds about like what I'm looking for here. I love the points in this game. I think Green Bay wins outright. I said it last week. This is collectively the healthiest that the 4 wide receivers / tight end, 5 receivers in all there, in my rudimentary grasp of math tells me, that they have been all year for Aaron Rodgers. I think everything is coming into place for another role for the Packers this year. It's strength on strength, Packer offense v. San Francisco defense. Biggest wild card in all of this is Colin Kaepernick. This is it's situations like this and the higher upside that he's thought to possess than Alex Smith. That's why he kept the job. Again, I know it's a gutsy play on my part, but I'm sticking with my pick of Green Bay to go back to the Super Bowl for the second time in 3 years. That, of course, means they got to win this game here. I think they're going to do it. Points be damned, but I'm glad to have them.
You know, the Packers, I've been listening all day to a lot of outlets, seem like a very trendy pick this week. And, look, these teams obviously met in week one. 49ers won 30-22. But I agree with most people that you can't take a ton from that game because there's a lot of changes on both sides. I think the Packers have 7 different starters now from then. And then the Niners, obviously the big thing is a quarterback with Kaepernick instead of Smith. I would like to point out that final score was not indicative of how much San Francisco dominated Green Bay and Lambeau. Because if you recall, most people don't, you might, Green Bay had a late punt return in that game from Randall Cobb, I believe, that should have been pulled back with a clip on the back. So Green Bay by no means was played to the level where they should have been within one possession of San Francisco. I'd just like to make that point. Now, the other point I'd like to make is with Kaepernick, I'm getting the impression, at least, and I'm not necessarily saying from you, but from others, that people would be more inclined to back the Niners here if Alex Smith was still under center as opposed to Kaepernick. And honestly, I'm wondering why they think that. It was only 4 weeks ago that San Francisco went to New England, and yes, the game got very competitive at the end, and they almost blew it, but they housed them in the first half with Kaepernick under center. This is the first game we're going to disagree on so far in the playoffs. I'm laying the number with San Francisco. I think this is a bad matchup for Green Bay because, yes, they have the receivers back. Yes, Aaron Rodgers, but I've mentioned this all throughout the year. Green Bay has one Achilles heel. It's been their Achilles heel, really, throughout the Rodgers-McCarthy era there. And that's the offensive line. If Justin Smith can play here and be close to 100%, that's a terrible matchup for Green Bay. San Francisco is going to wreak havoc on Green Bay's offensive line. They're going to pressure Rodgers. Rodgers had trouble with Seattle in their pass rush, remember, in week three there on that Monday night debacle. And I don't know if you read about this. I think we talked about it very early in the year, the circadian advantage. Have you read about this, about West Coast teams, or, pardon me, East Coast teams? I know Green Bay's in the Central time zone technically, but when they go west for prime time games, the West Coast hosts cover about 70% of the time. Give me the Niners to advance. Yes. Give me the Niners to advance over Green Bay. I think Green Bay was the one team. The difference here ultimately is that you and I, when we went over our power rankings heading into the playoffs, Ricky, if I recall, I think Green Bay, there was the biggest disparity of all teams between you and me on them. You have them at number one, right?
If I do still have them at number one, where I had them at the beginning of the year. Ashes to ashes, okay. Dust to dust.
I had them at number five. I think they're great, but I have them at number five. So, well, I think that's I think you just are higher on Green Bay is what this ultimately boils down to, this pick. And I just think it's a bad matchup. And I think trendy underdogs, now keep this in mind when I pick the next game, are not the way to go.
Well, and I'll tell you what, again, the hipster pick, ironically, last year in the divisional round, and you were right on this one, it was the Giants over the Packers. So it would be very, very interesting if the hipster pick were the Packers this time around. I will just say this, as far as it goes with Kaepernick and Smith, if some people are thinking that, and I'm not, because you know me, I'm pretty much on Green Bay at this point, and I think that they're going to surmount this obstacle. If people are looking at it that way, it's a little bit curious. But, again, Alex Smith, a little safer than at Colin Kaepernick. You're not going to go as high up or as high down on the probability scale. You pretty much know what you're going to get a little bit more out of Mr. Game Manager. Maybe if you were looking at that and you go back to the classic last year that they had against New Orleans, the best game of Alex Smith's career by a long shot, showing that he can air it out under certain circumstances, and maybe they're figuring that there would be another effort like that against a Green Bay team without an overwhelming defense, again, as they were when they won the Super Bowl 2 years ago, a good enough defense, although, again, that defense was, I think, better than what we've seen out of them the last 2 years. It's the only concern that I have. They're the weakest of the four units in my book. I think it goes Green Bay offense, San Francisco defense, San Francisco offense, Green Bay defense as you're looking at it. But, should be an all-time classic Saturday night.
Should be a good game. It's the one game. I think it is going to be the best game of the weekend, without question.
It's
certainly, obviously better than every game last weekend. So this should be – I cannot – even though I like the Niners, I can't imagine them blowing them out. I've got them winning by a touchdown.
Well, we talked about this, again, at the top of the show, how horrible the wild card weekend was. The only two hopes that we have for good action are both of the NFC games, both of the Fox games. That takes us to Sunday, 1 o'clock Eastern time at the Georgia Dome. Regrettably, he's a four-time lounge guest after last week, Kenny Albert, not on the call with us one. I don't know why. Tom Brennan, Brian Billick, the lovely Tan Laura Oakman, and Chris Myers on the call in the Georgia Dome Sunday, early afternoon. Seattle at Atlanta, and the line Atlanta is laying 2.5, had been 2 earlier in the week. This is one of these things, again, where, you do tend to see a lot of people lined up on the underdog. I was a little bit surprised to see USA Today Sports Weekly saying Atlanta 28-17. But I will say this. If Atlanta wins, it will be that kind of a game. It's got to be the kind of a game where Matt Ryan and that offense can get out there, get in rhythm, and impose their will. And in a game where, well, let's just say that the crowd is situationally loud at the Georgia Dome, a bunch of front runners. But anyways, under the circumstances, it will be a loud rockin' house, as any dome is. But again, I just don't see
long?
That kind of a scenario.
For how long will
Seattle.
It be rocking? For how
well,
long will it be rocking?
When
things start going wrong, it's going to sound like a library.
You know, you're right, Kyle. You're right, and that's the whole thing. You talk about situationally loud crowds going into a game; they can be taken out of it. And I think, in looking at it, you and I see Seattle coming in and working Atlanta. You know, similar to what they've done to teams in recent weeks. Again, last week they didn't win in a blowout, and I don't think this will be a blowout. The one thing I'd like to say, and I'd like to see if I can get you to agree with this, because I think I feel like Atlanta's being framed for a crime by drawing Seattle and that they're going to look like a bunch of choke artists. Can I get you to agree with me that with or without a healthy RG3, Atlanta would have beaten Washington this weekend?
Yeah, I would take Atlanta. Yeah, and that's the point.
Okay.
I feel terrible for Atlanta, Ricky, to be honest. I know I rip on them all the time, and I'm not going to rip on them now because, quite frankly, I think I'm going to be able to do it next week. But it happened to them again. They drew another terrible matchup. I talked about this last week when we were kind of previewing what we thought the games would be this weekend. They are 0-3 in the Mike Smith, Matt Ryan era in the playoffs. All three times the team they lost to represented the NFC in the Super Bowl. The last 2 years, the team won the Super Bowl, the Packers and the Giants.
Yeah.
The Seahawks are the hot team. And if there's one team that can match up with Jones and White, it's Seattle. And Seattle kind of talks a lot. They don't kind of talk a lot. They do talk a lot. They have a lot of confidence. Honestly, I would be more inclined to take Atlanta against any other team in the playoffs right now besides Seattle. This is just they call it a perfect storm and things work perfectly in your favor. This is the most imperfect storm there could ever be for the Falcons. I know there are some travel issues with the Seahawks. I know they lost Clemens to an injury. But I think people are kind of hunting it. And, you know, there are people who are saying to me, oh, is Atlanta really going to blow it again? I say yes. Outright, Seattle comes in and they knock out Atlanta. I really like this game a lot. This is my favorite game of the weekend.
Yeah, it kind of is for me as far as likelihood on this. I will say,
I just wanted to say, I haven't picked, you know, obviously I was wrong with Cincinnati last week, but an underdog's got to cover sooner or later, and with me taking the 49ers, you know, Saturday night, I've got to jump on a dog sooner or later, and to me, this one screams dog. I'd like to put, I got another great stat for you, too, while it's fresh in my mind.
Okay.
You and I, after last week's show, were kind of doing some good digging and doing some good research. Remember about I brought up the playoff, the last 25 years, 30 years of playoff games, and we were looking at all the lines going down memory lane there. And we found that there was only one instance where a home team was a dog in the divisional round. That was the Dallas-Detroit game of 91, if you remember. That was the year before Dallas went on its huge run. Detroit was a one-point dog at home to Dallas, and they crushed them. Now, after that, Dallas had the last laugh. But I read something in the middle of this week. This is only the fifth time. Detroit was not the number one seed that year. Washington was with Mark Griffin, and Washington crushed Detroit the following week in the NFC Championship game for those keeping score at home. But this is only the fifth time in history since the playoff format was realigned in 1990 that a number one seed has been favored by less than a field goal. The previous four instances saw an outright upset each time.
Really? Okay. Well,
I said, imperfect storm. The reason this line is not three is because the books do not want to get all that Seattle money. It'll be interesting to see if it goes to three. I don't think it will. I think it's actually more inclined to go back down to two. Seattle, outright win.
I would agree with that. The last game of the weekend, Sunday late afternoon, 4:30 Eastern time at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough. It's the CBS A team of Nance and Sims with Steve Tasker working the sidelines. New England laying 9.5 against Houston. It had been 10 when it opened here during the week. And again, it's funny. There's a little bit of an inversion between us this week, Kyle, as far as how we're looking at this. You've been a much more dog-friendly guy through the course of the season, even coining the great nickname for me of road favorite Ricky along the way here. Again, not that we're going to be seeing road favorites in the playoffs here as much. This is going to be my third dog of the four this week, again, just because.
Wow.
I think, again, I don't think Houston can win. I think they have a better puncher's chance than Baltimore, but I think it's by a tiny, tiny sliver. I think, again, they're going to be out there. They're going to be trying to push it with Foster, trying to get a good handle on the time of possession. They do have New England beat on that in the regular season, 32-52 to 30-41. That could be a way to try to disrupt the timing and the rhythm in the offense for New England there. I don't think Houston's going to win outright. I think they got, although, again, you made me a little nervous with that stat before that indicated that, again, it would be rare in this situation for Houston to cover but not win the game. Nevertheless, that's basically what I'm working for here. I think it's getting to be overblown, this whole sense, and that idiot Dan Shaughnessy ran a column this week about how it's New England's got a bye, and I think there's so much talk. I think people are so down on Houston at this point in time. I think we're going to be a little bit surprised at the end of the day, and I think they're going to lose, but it's going to be something more like 24-17.
Here's the thing. This line does scare me for this simple rhetorical question. Who the hell would believe Houston game? I mean, did you watch the Monday Night Football game? And for this, it boils down to me. I was waffling back and forth because, you know me, when everyone's going one way, I like to go walk in the other direction. But the stat I brought up at the outset, where of the last 48 NFL playoff games, the straight-up winners covered 45 of those times, is kind of sealed it. And here's the thing. I do agree with everyone. I've heard a lot of people that Houston is going to play better here because, Lord knows, they can't be any worse than they were on Monday Night Football.
Right, right.
But here's the question, Ricky. Are they going to be 3 touchdowns better? I don't think so. The back door will probably be open. If this was regular season, I would not be recommending this under any means. But you know what? I've always say, if you're going to take an underdog, at least, even if it's double digits, have some sliver of hope that they could win outright. I have no belief here that Houston will win this game. Patriots lay the number.
All right, well,
so we disagree
you
on two games.
We do. And in both instances, it's me going with the dogs, which, again, real Freaky Friday situation between you and I with the regular season and with the playoffs here. Let me ask you this. On my assertion that by a tiny bit, I mean, if somebody puts a gun to your head, and you'd probably say shoot rather than have to make this choice, but if somebody puts a gun to your head and says, better chance to win outright, Houston or Baltimore, what say you, Kyle?
Baltimore.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. There's a clip and save to see who keeps it closer.
I don't believe. I've lost all faith in Houston. I mean, I just don't see any way they win this game. I know New England has gagged a couple times before in the playoffs. There was that game a couple years ago against the Jets where I think they were a double-digit favorite as well. It was in this very round, I know. I just don't see Houston as having, and Houston is the team that I picked to win the Super Bowl. I just don't see them as having any shot here whatsoever. And it's not so much, well, it is somewhat of a shot at Houston, but it's also the regard I have for New England. Here's the thing. I like New England a lot more than I like Denver. And
okay.
So, I mean, that'll we can talk about that ad nauseum next week because I think everyone is in agreement that's going to be the AFC Championship game. You know, the line will probably be around 3 because I just think if you make it 2.5, the Sharps will bet Denver, and if you make it 3.5, the Sharps will bet New England just out of sheer principle. So you're probably looking at a 3-point line there, and I can tell you right now that I love New England in that game, and I love New England going to Denver next week.
There's probably nothing at this point that's happened that's going to upset the apple cart vis-a-vis. We said last week our Super Bowl predictions. You said Seattle over New England. I said Green Bay over New England. And both of those scenarios obviously still very much intact at this point. I guess with me, again, I didn't pick Houston to win the Super Bowl at the beginning of the year. I picked them to win the AFC, though. And maybe there's a little bit on this point, and maybe it's akin to the whole, I know somewhere, you know, buried underneath the layers of hate and rage is that girl I used to know. I guess there's a little bit of that with me with Houston. They got to be in there somewhere, right, Kyle? They got to be. I mean,
here's the point. I watched that game against Cincinnati. I watched that game against Cincinnati, Ricky. It's not like they played great. I know the total yardage says otherwise, but Cincinnati just played awful in that game. Andy Dalton missed a lot of opportunities. A.J. Green was wide open on a couple of occasions. You think Tom Brady's missing those throws? No, sir, he is not.
Probably not. Well, we've reached the wrap-up point here. We'll be back for Championship Sunday, one of my favorite days of the year. We'll be previewing that next week. Thanks very much, Kyle. Another great one here today with you.
I think this was our best show ever.
I think it is, my friend. Take care. Talk to you next week.
Mm-hmm.